Good evening and welcome to this evening's program hosted by the Viva Fest and Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. My name is Marcella Davison-Aviles. It is my pleasure to introduce a legend, an activist, a really cool lady named Rita Moreno, author of Rita Moreno, a Memoir. Her distinguished career spans six decades, and she has the honor of being one of the few performers to win an Oscar, an Emmy, a Tony, a Grammy, and a Golden Globe Award. Ms. Moreno was born in Puerto Rico and moved to New York City as a child. Woohoo! She made her Broadway debut at 13 and has appeared in classic films like Singing in the Rain, The King and I, Colonel Knowledge, and of course, her iconic role as Anita in West Side Story. Her career in television began with a children's show, The Electric Company. She won a Grammy in 1972 for her contribution to the soundtrack album, and her Broadway credits include The Last of the Red Hot Lovers, Gantry, The Odd Couple, and a Tony Award-winning role in The Ritz. She's the recipient of numerous awards, including the Library of Congress Living Legends Award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and she also has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Moderating this evening's conversation is Jan Yanahiro. Jan was the longtime host of KPIX's Evening Magazine, and she currently serves as the director for the School of Multimedia Communications at the Academy of Art University. Ladies and gentlemen, it's an extreme honor. Please join me in welcoming Rita Moreno and Jan Yanahiro.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello. Oh, my. Oh. Okay. Thank you. Oh, my God. People are standing. People are standing. thank you very much.
Standing ovation to those of you listening on the radio. Thank you all. Thank you, Rita. It is a joy for me and a deep honor to be on stage with truly a living legend. Yes? Woo!
Thank you.
Miss Rita Moreno, and full disclosure, I count Rita as one of my dear friends.
Oh, we're very dear friends. Yes,
so
we are.
I really want to... Full disclosure, you know, every broadcaster's got to do a full disclosure. So, truly, you've heard her accolades, but I want to add one quick thing. Rita is a mother, a grandmother of two boys, two grandsons. She's an actor and author. We have her book. Yes, her book is here. Rita Moreno, Memoir. She is, as you heard, the winner of an Oscar, an Emmy, a Tony, two Emmys actually, a Golden Globe, Presidential Medal of Freedom. And I just want to add one quick thing. She's the only Hispanic woman to do so.
Que viva! That's really nice.
So let's just get started. And okay. You heard that she's from Puerto Rico. You were 5 years old. Yay, we got the fan club
Look,
here.
Woo! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Puerto Ricans.
Right here in
wow.
the audience.
That's great.
So Rita, you were just 5 when you traveled with your mom from Puerto Rico
yeah.
to the barrios of the Bronx. So tell us, what inspired this trip for you and your mom to come to America?
My mom... had done something extraordinary for a little Catholic island. She got a divorce. And she had a bad fellow, my father, Paco. And he was kind of a womanizer, and she was really very young. My mom had me when she was about 17, and a very young 17 at that. And she just decided that life for her and for her little girl just had to be better than it had been for her. And she did something very heroic. She left me, after the divorce, she left me with my father and my little brother, Francisco, and she took a boat, a ship to New York City, and stayed with an aunt in an apartment in the ghetto, and got a job as a seamstress, as many Puerto Rican women still do, by the way. We sew very well. And she got a job in a sweatshop, made enough money within about 3 to 4 months, and had learned just enough English to make her way back to use that money for another ship journey, and went back to Puerto Rico, picked me up, and brought me to the United States because life was just somehow going to be better here than it was. I, of course, was in shock when I got to this country, which was New York Harbor, because it was freezing. And on the way there, actually, we had a horrendous ride on the ship. There was by the evening, ran into a horrific storm at sea, which is pretty scary. I mean, the boat suddenly you felt like you were sitting on a cork. And you can imagine what that did to us. We were scared to death. We were way down at the bottom of the ship. And I have to say, you know, Puerto Ricans are remarkable for so many things. Latinos, but Puerto Ricans in this particular situation, you know, we have many, many wonderful qualities, but one of the most impressive qualities that we have is panicking. I mean, when it comes to panicking, we are the envy of the world. It was such a caterwaul you have never heard in your life from so many mouths. Ay, me voy a morir! Me voy a morir! And certainly it wasn't funny then, but as I think of it now, it was kind of, it had its comical side because, for one thing, Puerto Ricans at that time certainly didn't swim. That was the thing that, well, that's the kind of thing that tourists did. We didn't know anything. We ate from the sea, but we sure as hell didn't put our little bodies into that water. And you know, we are very passionate people. We are really crazy passionate people. And we don't know from restraint. What is restraint? I mean, when in doubt, flip out. See, this is recognition here in the front rows. They're all nodding vigorously and laughing very loud. But the most wonderful experience, my first American experience, happened when I give long answers, don't I?
It's okay. It's your show.
Anyway, the first great American experience was when we were reaching New York Harbor, and I saw this enormous green lady just coming out of the sea, huge, huge lady with a crown like a princess. And what I thought she was holding was a gigantic ice cream cone. And I said, Mami, ¿quién es esa señora tan grande? And my mommy told me that this was a lady who was welcoming us into this amazing country, that we were welcome here, the poor, the tired, the hungry. And if I had been a little more cognizant, I would have said, boy, we are so overqualified. We are all of those things and then some. Because our luggage was what I call poor people's shopping bags. And my mom had sent a trunk to an aunt of hers who lived in barrio. And that's where we went when we arrived here. And I was in shock because it was so cold. And it was also the first time I had ever seen a tree in the Bronx. This was the Bronx, without leaves on it. First time. And one was interesting, but two, three, four, you know, all of these bare trees. And I said to Mommy, what happened here? She said, oh, it's a thing called winter. And she said, they'll come back, you'll see, and then it'll look a little bit like Puerto Rico.
And, you know, when you arrived here, of course, you heard Rita speak Spanish. I mean, you did not know English at all.
Not a word. Not a word. And that was cause for great concern, because pretty soon, as soon as, like within months of coming to America, I was thrown into kindergarten. And this was before the Puerto Rican diaspora. So there were very few Latinos. When I lived in the Bronx, there were a lot of Jews, there were Italians, there were Irish, but almost no Hispanic people. So that going into kindergarten was an absolute nightmare. I was terrified. There wasn't a child in my class who spoke Spanish. And the teacher didn't speak Spanish. And in those days, it was sink or swim.
And in fact, you have a paragraph in here in your book that you really wanted your mother to improve her English.
Well, yes, I know what you want me to do. Okay, so she did have difficulty with the English language. Actually, till the end of her days, there were certain letters you couldn't pronounce properly. You know, J became Y, like Jess. Jess, I am wearing my pajamas, that kind of thing. Do you know what I'm in? And my mama used to say every, like once a month, we would change the sheets on the bed. And my mama would say, Rosita, do you know what day is today? It's Sarah Day. It's time to change the sheets. Yeah, it's funny now. And one day when my little girlfriend Angela came for a visit, a play date, it was a really hot, humid, as it can only happen in Manhattan in the summer, really humid. You felt like you were living in a baggie. And Angela, who of course was called Angela in my house, came to visit, and my mom starts pacing up and down the apartment and fanning herself and saying, ay, bendito sea Dios. She says, you know what, girls? It's too hot to do any work today, for peace's sake. So I'll tell you what we are going to do. We're going to pack a picnic lunch and have a nice swing at the beach. I don't know how to say it. I just could not. I was mortified. Because Angela is going, hearing all these bad words. And I take my mommy aside. I say, mommy, mommy, bendito sea Dios, mommy, te ruego. I'm begging you. A-E-I-O-U. Can't you say beach? Can't you at least say sheets? And she said, no, I can't. I said, why, mommy? She said, because I got trouble with my bowels. It sounds like stand-up. When I met the man of my dreams, a nice Jewish doctor, a redundant phrase. Can you imagine how both families felt? One side of the Bronx is saying, ay, bendito, ay, 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 ay. The other side of the Bronx is saying, oy, give up, oy, give up. So I said to my mama, listen, I think we really need to make peace with both sides of the family. I want you to meet Lenny. He's a wonderful man. You'll love him. And she said, okay, that's a good idea. We'll make peace. When he comes over to the house, she opens the door. She takes one look at him and she says, Jew, are you? The poor man, he said, what? Are Jew, are you? Poor guy was so nervous, he actually said, yes, I am.
We are in the Louis B. Mayer Theater, as you know, as we walked in. And this is interesting because I read in your book that Louis B. Mayer of MGM fame said about you that you are the beautiful Spanish Elizabeth Taylor. How did you feel about that?
I was thrilled to pieces. Listen, you have to understand, I didn't have role models. There wasn't one role model when I was a girl in America. Not one. There was no Jennifer Lopez or Rosie Perez. There was nobody. So I had to find my role model elsewhere, and I chose Elizabeth Taylor because she was gorgeous, and I had eyebrows like her. My hair was kind of
curly, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to look like her. And I did. I did everything I could to look like Elizabeth Taylor. So when I went to meet Louis B. Mayer of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the first thing he says is, my God, she looks like a Spanish Elizabeth Taylor. I said, yes. Yes, yes. And it was decided then that I would have a contract, a seven-year contract with MGM. That's how things happened. And it was crazy. He didn't know what I could do. You know, I may have been a disaster for all he knew, but I was taken to meet him by a talent scout who saw me dancing at a dancing school recital. It actually happened through a talent scout. He did his job.
What in those early years, and you made your debut at 13 on Broadway, but what in those early young years, you're growing up, you said, aha, I want to go to Hollywood?
Well, first of all, we have to go back to Puerto Rico because I used to dance for Grandpa. He'd put on a record. Anybody remember records?
Yes.
And I would dance, and he would love that, and I'd shake my little booty. And I remember thinking, I like this kind of attention. This is nice. And I think I was absolutely wired this way. I think I was born to do what I am still doing at 82. I was just made that way. So when I got to New York City, my mom had a girlfriend who was named Irene Lopez, who was a Spanish dancer. And she saw me bopping around the apartment and said to my mom, you know, I think Rosita has some talent. Would you let me take her to my dance teacher and see what he says? And my mom said, of course. And we went to meet Paco Cancino, who was real royalty then because he was one of the dancing Cancinos, one of whom was a young woman named Margarita Cancino, who became Rita Hayworth. So he thought I had the goods. And so I started to take Spanish dance lessons. I still play castanets.
All right.
Yeah. Woo! I don't want to forget where I come from.
But now, remember, back then in the day, being Hispanic in the land of blondes in Hollywood, blonde starlets, mm-hmm. How did that make you just go for it, that drive?
Well, you know, I didn't know what was in store for me. All I knew was that the Hollywood film studio of my dreams, MGM, had signed me to a contract. This is the studio that had Gene Kelly, that had Ann Miller, that had Judy Garland. It was the dream studio of any young person who sang and danced. And I thought, I couldn't, you know, how lucky can you get? I never, except for one film, I never got to dance. I never got to sing. And what I played mostly were ethnic roles. And in those times, ethnic roles were anybody who couldn't speak English well, who had dark skin, and I call them, sarcastically, of course, dusky maidens. And I played Polynesians, I played American, I played a lot of American Indian girls, I played Arabian girls, I played every kind of person who had, young woman who had a dark skin. And, you know, if that ain't a kind of biased way of casting a young woman, I can't think of another. I was deeply disappointed and deeply, deeply hurt at having to play only those kind of characters. These young women that I played inevitably were ignorant, uneducated, could barely speak English, so almost every part that I had needed and required an accent. They were usually some white man's mistress. They were sexually loose and easy. That didn't say a whole lot for the way in which ethnic women were perceived in those days. And I did that for years and years and years. And the more I did it, the more it hurt, and the more disappointed I became in this so-called Hollywood career. And the only reason I didn't leave it, because the young people always say, well, so why didn't you leave? Easy for them to say. That paid the rent for a very long time. My mom wasn't working. I had a new baby brother and a third stepfather who had left her and went to Japan in the army. So there was a number of reasons why I didn't just leave the premises. Also, I was very stubborn. I just thought, I know that I have talent. And I know that if I stick around, someday someone, somewhere, will see it and will do something for me.
And we're glad you did, because along came West Side Story. Woo!
You know what's interesting? That I found my role model in the girl that I played, Anita. I never had a role model before then. And I found her in the girl that I was playing in West Side Story.
And she, in fact, Anita, is Puerto Rican.
She is Puerto Rican, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting that I thought it was the only time in my professional life up till then where I had played a Hispanic girl who had self-respect and a sense of dignity. The only time in all those years of making movies and doing television, it was the only time I played a girl of character. It took a long time. I was already in my late 20s when I did that movie.
26, I think you were.
26,
when
yeah.
You did that movie. When you were, I mean, how many of you have seen the film, West Side Story? Woo! Okay, here you go. So we all know Anita. Just tell us a little secret. When you were shooting the movie, was it fun? Was it dancing, singing, all that stuff?
It was thrilling, because I was working with a genius named Jerome Robbins, who was the co-director and the choreographer of West Side Story. He did the play originally. And I also met him when I was doing The King and I. So I did the only two films that he had ever done, ever, The King and I and West Side Story. And it was very difficult for me because I hadn't danced in a long, long, long time. And, you know, it's like suddenly trying to play three sets of tennis. I mean, I didn't even have any muscle memory anymore. I had not danced for such a long time. And I was absolutely hysterically nervous that I wouldn't get the part because of the dancing part of it.
But you obviously got the part and nailed it and then, of course, won the Oscar for this part, Anita. But in the book...
And the Golden Globe.
And the Golden Globe. But in the book, you talk about how you didn't think you were going to win.
Oh, I was sure I wasn't going to win, because Judy Garland was up in the same category, Best Featured Actress. And she was in a hospital room with the cameras there, and I thought, well, I don't stand a chance. I had forgotten that people voted way in advance of the night. And I flew in from Manila, where I was playing yet another dusky maiden in a crappy World War II movie, playing a girl named Sisa, who was a gorilla in the forests of the Philippines in a World War II movie. It was a terrible movie. And, you know, I remember being very depressed because I had done West Side Story, but I really didn't know if that movie was going to be a hit. I really didn't. Nobody did. Nobody in the cast thought it was going to happen. And here it's playing all over the place now, like 50 years later. It's astonishing. So that night, I just thought, well, hell, I've been nominated. I'm going to be there. And I'll be there to see Judy Garland cry a lot and win. And then they call my name, and I damn near wet my knickers. I was really astonished. And I remember saying to myself as I got up out of... My mom was there, by the way. And you can see her in the film when my name is called. And she was sitting in back of me, and she hugged me. And I remember saying to myself, don't run. It's not dignified. Because I'd seen so many lady actresses do that, you know, pick up their gown and... And I didn't want that. I wanted to have dignity. And I walked all the way up to the stage. And the reason a lot of people run is that they're far away from the stage and they're afraid the applause will stop before they get to the stage, which is kind of an empty, difficult moment, right, if the applause stops. But everybody in that theater was so happy to see West Side Story win. I mean, every time West Side Story was up for an Oscar, there was such huge applause and appreciation when it won. And we won, until then, we won the most Oscars ever, until many years later with, what's the name of the Titanic? Titanic, yeah.
But you won, but this is a funny story you've got to hear. So, you know, Rita goes up on stage, dignified, of course, and her acceptance award, her acceptance speech is?
Okay, it's the shortest in history. It was, "I can't believe it. Good Lord. I leave you with that." I mean, you know I didn't plan to win. And many, many years later, in fact, a year ago, when I received the Lifetime Achievement for Screen Actors Guild, I said, I'm going to make up for that.
Lifetime Achievement Award.
I'm going to make up for that this time. And I did. I did. Yeah.
So in the book.
Oh, I know. When I was going to accept for the Screen Actors Guild, I love this. They said, you have 1 minute. I said, what? Because I learned in advance that I was going to get that. That's not a surprise. You know it in advance, and they do a lot of advance publicity. And they said, you have 1 minute. I said, but I'm a Puerto Rican. That's impossible. They said, well, you're just going to have... Well, in fact, it turned out to be a 2 minute, 15 second speech, and it was very well received.
Rocking Good Time, she sang during the acceptance.
I sang
it was fabulous.
Acapella. But you know, someone told me that... my manager... Oprah was sitting next to our table, and that she said after my acceptance speech with the song, she said, that's the best acceptance I have ever heard. Isn't that nice?
It was good. It was fabulous. And Julia Roberts said the same thing to you and Meryl Streep, I understand. My spies.
Julia Roberts was in tears. I don't even know her. Isn't that lovely? And oh, you know who else? The winner that evening, oh, my God, the Australian actress.
Nicole Kidman?
No, the other one. What? Kate Blanchett. I saw her backstage, and she said, oh, I'm so happy for you, but you were wonderful. I was just dying with happiness. I was really thrilled. Because you know what? The difference between an Oscar and a Life Achievement Award is that with an Oscar, it's for one performance at one time. And a Life Achievement Award is for everything you've ever done. And that's pretty fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to say, for those of us with the book, we know some of the parts of the book. And I just want to just touch upon two men in the book.
Oh.
One, Elvis Presley. You met Elvis Presley.
Fine, I didn't just meet him. What do you mean, met? You didn't read the book.
So Elvis Presley, your comment on Elvis.
Well, no, that's because of Marlon. I went with Marlon Brando for 8 years. That's a different story. And Marlon made me very angry one time. He was another womanizer. And when I found out that Elvis Presley wanted to meet me, I said, and Colonel Parker called me on the phone. I never met him. Miss Marina, this is Colonel Parker. And I was tempted to say, I would never have guessed. As I manage Elvis Presley, and my client, Elvis Presley, would like to meet you. Would you like to meet him? And I thought about Marlon, and I said, yes, I would. So I did. And Marlon went crazy. It was wonderful. Marlon was throwing chairs, and it was wonderful.
Your comment about Elvis, though.
Oh, yeah, well, he was no hound dog. Right.
We leave it at that. Moving on to Marlon Brando.
By the way, he was a darling boy. He really was. He was sweet, and he was shy. He was just no hound dog.
Marlon Brando, and those of us with the book, you know there's a special picture of Rita and Marlon in the book, and
I thought you were going to say in the nude. Well, it's my bareback.
Yes, and we understand that this picture hung in Marlon's house forever until after he died.
It was the only photograph in his whole house, I found out. And I only found out when it was being put up for auction. And it's a photograph I gave him of us because we were looking at photographs of us in a film we did together, which is way after all kinds of things happened with us. And it was the only picture. And that's when I realized he really did love me. He was very much in love with me. He just didn't know how to deal with me.
Just in case you can see.
She's showing the picture to the
audience.
Just
in case you can see from the audience, I just wanted to show you, this is in the book.
Well, I see some gray-haired ladies going.
They are not amused.
So I've got to ask
Deal you. With it, my dears.
Got to ask you, though, about Marlon Brando. Tell us about, just give us a snippet of who he really was.
He was one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. He was extremely well-read. He was interested in everything. He was a very curious man. He had a gorgeous vocabulary. He was also one of the most intuitive people I have ever met. And all those are good things, but he was a serious womanizer, and we had a very, very tumultuous 8 years. I was always leaving and then coming back and leaving and coming back, and that was a very, very difficult period of my life, ending with my taking pills, hoping to end that misery, and thank goodness, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness it didn't work. And Rita is very honest about it. She writes an entire chapter about her attempted suicide, page 172, by the way, How to Survive Suicide, just in case you want to browse that part. So tell us, in Hollywood, what was it that was so exciting for you? There are a couple questions here about what was the best thing about Hollywood? What was it that was thrilling for you?
Oh, I'll tell you. No question, my 3 years at MGM Studios, I mean, think of it this way. Think of a young Puerto Rican girl who had a very hard time being called spick and all kinds of things when she was in New York as a young woman, and as a girl, really, who comes to this dream place called a Hollywood film studio, MGM Studios. I spent all of my days there for 3 years visiting sets, film sets. I was on the Humphrey Bogart set, and I was on the Judy Garland set when she was doing Summer Stock, that fabulous movie. I was on the Annie Get Your Gun set with Betty Hutton, which Judy Garland was supposed to have done, but then got sick because she was drinking so much. I mean, I visited every film set. I would get up in the morning if I wasn't working, put on a full face of makeup, and get all dressed up and walk. I mean, take my little jalopy. I had a jalopy to the studio, and I would park, and Jack Nicholson told me that he used to sit at the gate, MGM gate, and wait for me. He didn't know who I was. He said, but you used to be very tanned with the sun, and you wore white, tight white dresses, and you gave me heart attacks. He told me this when I was doing the film with him, Carnal Knowledge. And I mean, I damn near fainted when he told me that. I said, oh, why didn't you say hello?
I'm going to go to questions from you, the audience. Here's one, Rita. Says, loved your voice on Sonia Sotomayor's book.
Oh, I did Sonia Sotomayor's book. That's right. Thank you. That was a hard one. All that legalese. Oh, my God, that was so hard to do. That. And then there was a part where I got so moved that I started to cry and I couldn't stop. And we had to stop the recording session and break early for lunch. And when I came back after lunch, I started to cry again. I thought, oh, my God, I've got to deal with this. And it was the part about the pornography, children's pornography, and how she dealt with that case as a DA, district attorney. Oh, my God, that kept, I love children. And, oh, man, that was hard to do that. I went home exhausted every night. I'm like, I did the book for myself, too. So, if you want the
audio version,
version, it's great for driving. Except for the sad parts.
Another question, again, about West Side Story. What's it like to be in one of the most famous, most enduring musicals of all time?
Fabulous.
Knowing your name will live on forever.
I know. That's a legacy. You know, there are certain films I did that will always be around. That's one. And The King and I is one. Carnal Knowledge is a classic. I did several. Singing in the Rain is a classic. That's four, and I think I did one more that was a classic, and I can't think of it at the moment. But that's amazing. I don't know how many actors could say that. Who knew? Who would have thunk? This Puerto Rican kid. I always go back to that because it's so delicious. It's so rich.
Well, speaking of being ethnic in the business, this one is about how do you feel about minorities being presented today in 2014?
Oh, my God, it's changed a lot, actually. It's changed. I used to quote Ricardo Montalban, who used to say the door is ajar. Well, it's more than ajar now, and you do see a lot more, not only Hispanics, but I'll tell you who you see very little of, which always amazes me. Asians, they're still kind of invisible. And when they are used, it's usually as doctors or scientists. I don't understand that. What does that mean exactly? That they're smart? Smarter than us, we Latinos who play other things? But it's changed quite a bit. I don't think it's as good as it should be yet, but we have come a long way. We really have come a long way.
Here's one, Rita. I recently watched a video of Joan Rivers interviewing you.
Oh, that was hilarious.
On the Tonight Show.
I saw it too recently, yeah.
I thought you and she had great rapport. What
we
was
did.
It like being with her? Did you know her off camera?
I did know her off camera. We weren't friends, but I did a number of the Tonight Shows with her. And somehow I could just, tell her off and it was okay. And we were talking. I remember... I think that one is the one where I was talking about, oh, she was so bad. She made fun of my small breasts. Because I told her I love breastfeeding, and she said, with what? Or something like that. She was very funny. And she wasn't mean then. I think she got very mean. And I did not like her comedy. She was still a very funny woman, and she started to use a lot of the F word in her older years. And, I just don't think it's necessary, and I think she was taking the hint from other comics. I didn't like her so much in her later years. Yeah. She was so desperate. She was, the face just became mask-like. I have no idea how many procedures she had, but it must have been plenty, because that woman didn't have one wrinkle on her. She did her hands even. She had fat put in there so you couldn't see the veins. And that's a procedure. Did you know there was such a thing?
No.
I just found that out recently. Yeah. And, that meant something to her, and that's what made her, for me, a very sad person who really felt that nobody would accept her unless she was perfect. That's really what that's about, So you can't hate people who feel that way. You feel sorry for them.
Here are a couple of fun questions. What is your absolute favorite dance music?
Oh, I love salsa. I love salsa. I can do that for, I think it's what's kept me younger. Not young, but younger. I love doing my music for my land.
And here's somebody else who saw you with Jim Rockford Files.
Oh, James Garner.
Yes, and said you had great rapport with him. What was he like?
Oh, he was He was a very good friend. And I made his very, I worked with him in his very first screen test at 20th Century Fox. This young, gorgeous hunk came in. You can imagine what he looked like when he was younger. He was gorgeous. And he was probably the worst actor I'd ever seen in my life at that time. And I thought, because 20th Century Fox used to do something wonderful. They'd bring in young people and screen test them. And if they thought they had promise, they would sign them and then start to groom them. They didn't even want to groom him. He was awful. He was just a piece of, he was like leaden. He was a piece of wood. And I kept saying to myself as I'm doing the screen test with him, man, how can you be that beautiful and so awful? But we became dear, dear friends. And those Rockford Files that I did, for which one I got one nomination and I got one Emmy for that. And he was wonderful. He had girlfriends. He was married, very happily married, but there were girls, women that he liked very much as friends. I was one, and I think Leslie Ann Warren was another. And I think he had a couple of other girlfriends. It might have been Julie Andrews. But he really appreciated women. He was just, everything that he appeared to be is what he was. He was a wonderful guy. I loved him dearly, and he is missed.
A serious question. What political, social issues are important to you now?
Well, I think at the top of the list is immigration. And hunger. I am very involved with hunger banks, where I do my best to give as much as I can to these. I just can't bear the thought of little children and old people going hungry. It's just, I can't conceive of such a thing. So I do my best, and I do a great deal, actually. I'll tell you what I've done recently, which is wonderful, because it's very satisfying to me, but it also makes money for causes. I have volunteered myself as a hostess in my home, and I will give a dinner for 10. And I usually cook it myself. Sometimes I don't, if I don't have the time, but I will make a dinner for 10 if people will pay whatever the organization is, at least $10,000. And recently, I did it for
Bread and Roses in from Marin. You gave your home and yourself.
But I also did it for GLAAD, and a person. And the funny thing is that I said when I got up at GLAAD, because I was giving Jennifer Lopez an award that night, and I said I would like to offer, you know, an auction item, and that's me, blah blah, and I'll cook and all that kind of stuff. And I said, and I won't even consider anything less that night, because they were really spending money. I said, I won't even consider anything less than $15,000. And a man raised his hand and he said,
$100,000. Wow.
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 And right now we're trying to figure out a date when I can be home to do this and when these people can be free to come to my house. But isn't that great?
That's fabulous. Good
yeah.
work you do.
So that is, you know, it's better than my sending, what, $100 to an organization or $500. This is big bucks. And that's what I love to do.
Just know she's got a beautiful home in case you guys want to bid.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous view of the bay. This is a home Rita designed herself. And she's a fabulous cook. In fact, I know you cook. Somebody's asking here, your favorite Puerto Rican dish.
My favorite Puerto Rican dish? Oh, I love mofongo. Doesn't that sound, you know, with my American ear, mofongo sounds like a dirty word in Spanish. Doesn't it? Up your mofongo. It really has a very dirty sound in English.
It does.
Mofongo.
But what is it?
It's fried sweet plantains, and you put a lot of garlic in them and some olive oil, and you just feast. It's plantains. It's mashed plantains.
You get some thumbs up way back there.
Yeah.
Serious question here. What do you consider your greatest achievement?
Still being here.
Wow.
I mean, wow, I'm thinking in December I'm going to be 83. And you know what? You know what? I'm going to have an album come out in the new year, and the producer is Emilio Estefan. It's in Spanish, and I will be doing one song in English. I don't want to say what it is, but it's from something I've done. And we're hoping to get, this is a hope, we're hoping to get Ricky Martin to do a duet with me.
Oh, fabulous. Number one on the charts
that
right away.
That does not mean we have him, that we have a yes. I know he's very interested, but we do. I want to be very clear about this so nobody goes around saying, oh, she's got Ricky. I don't yet have Ricky as a duet partner, but we're hoping.
But if anybody in the audience has any connections to Ricky...
No, Ricky is very interested, and we love each other dearly, and he thinks of me as the icon and all that kind of stuff, and he wants to do it. It's a question of whether legally, I know he's on a contract to a record company. It gets complicated like that, you know?
So, another question. What is on your bucket list?
Jeez, is there anything left? You know what? When the album comes out, I'm probably proud of the bucket list, and I'm going to be doing appearances, not only in the States, but in Hispanic countries and all that kind of stuff. And I'm hoping, well, Emilio Estefan is already saying, you're going to get nominated. You are going to get nominated, he says. So, you know, if that happens, I would probably faint. I mean, not at 83, geez. That's just too unbelievable.
Well, you have the speech ready.
Speech ready. Oh, not. Don't say, oh, good Lord, I leave you with that. No good, huh?
So we did talk about several men you referred to in the book. This question, who was the love of your life?
My husband. But the lust of my life was Marlon. Well, you know, there are different kinds of relationships that people have, and he was definitely the lust of my life. But Lenny was the one who counted the most and who treated me like something precious.
Oh, Lenny Gordon, Dr. Lenny Gordon. You were married how many years now?
We were married. We celebrated our 46th anniversary when he was in the hospital, dying. Right. Yeah, it was a very sad
He would say that he was your lighting director and your speech writer, and Lenny was so involved in your life. But he was a cardiologist when Rita met him in New York.
Right, yeah.
A nice Jewish doctor.
Yeah, right. So my daughter's a Jurican.
Fernanda
Luisa.
And she
designed jewelry. And she's as beautiful as
jewelry.
Her name. She made this necklace.
She made these earrings.
Oh, yeah, you
she
have
made
her
the necklace.
Earrings,
she made these earrings. Yeah. So we're going to do a couple last questions here. Lightning round. So, you know, quick questions. What actor would you like to star with today?
Oh, gosh, there's a bunch of them.
First up that comes to your mind.
Clive Owen. I love Clive Owen.
Clive Owen. Okay.
Surprise, huh? What? Well, Brad, either of the Brads wouldn't be too bad either. I saw them at the SAG Awards, and I thought I would faint. They're gorgeous. I felt like a dirty old lady. I am a dirty old lady.
So at 82 years young, what's the secret?
What's the secret of what?
To being 82 years young, to being vibrant, energized.
You know what? I'm just very, very fortunate. I have essentially a very optimistic nature. It's built in. It's my DNA, and I think that still working makes all of the difference. I think if I had to retire, I would not be a very happy person. However, if I had to retire, I would find some way to still stay in show business. And, you know, either direct or do something that had to do with what I love most in the world, other than my daughter and my grandchildren. But I think it's what keeps you alive. It keeps you going. Because my memory is not what it used to be, for instance. And I find that it always improves when I have to do a lot of learning of songs, or I have to do speeches where my brain has to get used. So as a result of that, I am now doing Lumosity. You know that thing that makes your brain work? And I also walk backwards on purpose. Well, it makes your brain shift. It's saying, oh, wait a minute, I'm not used to this. I say, yeah, well, get used to it. And it makes it more flexible. I write with my left hand very often as an exercise in making my brain work. Those are the things you can do when you get older. You can't jog, but you can certainly do a lot of other things that are, the more difficult it is and the more you try to do whatever it is, the more your brain works. It's very simple.
Best advice you ever got?
Best advice I ever got. Hold your temper.
Worst advice you ever got?
Hold your temper. No.
What remake of a movie would you like to star in? Remake of a movie.
Would I like to star in? Oh, I would love to do... actually, it's a play. I did the play, and I would love to do a movie of it, which is a masterclass. I played Maria Callas. I did that at the Berkeley Rep. I love that, yeah.
I know you traveled to Puerto Rico this summer. You also mm-hmm. traveled through Europe. But what city is still on your bucket list to visit?
I want to go to Tuscany. All that pasta, first of all. And then it's so beautiful. And I want to go to Lake Como, where George Clooney has his house. And wave at it. He's pretty gorgeous, too. No, but the Brads are killer gorgeous.
You have a beautiful garden, as I know. Mm-hmm. What singer do you listen to, say, when you're gardening?
I still love Barbra Streisand. Very, very, very much. Great singer. I love her. And I love the old singers. You know, I love Sinatra. And, Michael Bublé is wonderful. There's some contemporaries. I actually love Prince, which is not my style. Do you know that I made a video with Prince? Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Is that hilarious?
Mr. Purple himself?
Yeah. At a time when you couldn't call him by his name because his wife said to me, oh, by the way, when you come to shoot the video, don't call him by Prince because it belonged to some record company. It was a crazy thing. And I said, well, what do I do? And she mumbled something. So she never really told me. So I get on the set, and there he is, Prince, and he's just really a nice guy with very weird braces made of gold, pure gold. And the only way, because she really warned me, she says, please don't call him by Prince because he'll really get very upset. So at one point when I wanted to ask him a question and he's across the room, what do? I say, hoping he'll turn his head. And I turned into this English woman saying, I say, that's all I could do. It was hilarious. And it was, you know, I don't think that thing played for too long, the video that we made, but it was fun. I really had fun.
Quick Broadway question, because you started 13 on Broadway. What play would you like to star in on Broadway?
I would love to do The Glass Menagerie. I did it here at Berkeley Rep, but I've always wanted to do it in New York. But I wanted to do my play about my life in New York, but I had to make a very, very, very difficult choice, which is, do you want to go to Broadway and be away from your family at the age of 82? And who knows, you know, this is your third act. This is the third act of your life. Or do you want to stay with your family? Family wins, hands down. Yeah. It was a hard choice, though.
But you've got two gorgeous, handsome grandsons growing mm-hmm. up right here.
Oh, I got
one
as a babe. He is a babe. Woo, he's got a body on him. Unbelievable.
What book is on your bedside table?
On my bedside table? God, I've got so many. But my favorite book, because I reread it and reread it, and it's called The Children of Sanchez. It's an old, this is a book you should not miss, folks. The Children of Sanchez is an anthropologist who wrote about a Mexican family in Mexico years ago. And he literally moved into the tenement in which they lived in Mexico City. A man named Oscar Lewis, L-E-W-I-S. Do not miss seeing, hearing this, not hearing it, reading this book. It is extraordinary. It tells you everything you ever, ever wanted to know about that culture. It's astonishing. It's just an astonishing book. They tried to make a movie of it and couldn't. It's an anthropological study. He did one also of the Puerto Rican people, for which he got burned really badly because some of the things he said were, according to the Puerto Rican population, not nice. But, you know, it's an anthropological study. Anyway, don't forget Children of Sanchez.
A couple last questions. This one. What do you feel or think when you see yourself on TV singing and dancing?
You mean West Side Story?
Yeah, singing or dancing on film or TV. What do you think?
Well,
I
love it because I've never danced that well in my entire life. I never have danced that well again as I did in West Side Story. And there's just one scene where I would give money to do again, but there you go. That's the candy store scene. Yeah.
We'll have to watch
where the boys are abusing her. Yeah.
Best advice you would give to a young Latina actress coming up today?
Education, education, education. You know, there's no guarantee that you're going to be a movie star or a working actress or actor. There are no guarantees. So I always very strongly emphasize the importance of getting a skill, a real skill, that will help you pay for those acting lessons. It'll help you pay the rent. It'll help you pay for your food and a way of life. You can't just depend on having a big success in the business. It's really a tough business.
And to the audience here and to your fans, you get the last word, Rita. What would you like to say to your audience and fans tonight?
You know what? I would say keep moving no matter how bad and sad things are. Get yourself up, dust yourself off. You've heard that before, but I really believe in that. And keep moving.
Rita Moreno, everyone.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed this evening's conversation. Obviously, we're concluding now, and we just want to thank one more time Rita Moreno and Jan for being with us tonight. Again, my name is Marcela Davison-Aviles, CEO of the Mexican Heritage Corporation. She'll be signing books out in the lobby, and this concludes this evening's conversation from the Commonwealth Club of California and Viva Fest. Thank you.